As we approach Bram Stoker's 175th birthday, I thought it would be interesting to look at what might have inspired him to write his most famous novel, Dracula. You really don't have to go to the Carpathian Mountains to find historical accounts of vampire stories, or in fact, Dracula's castle. The British Isles have had our own fair share of vampire encounters over the years, and today we are going to explore some of them. I've deliberately opened up the windows behind me tonight, so that you might hear the sounds of the night birds chattering in the trees behind my house. Perhaps you might even hear some bats hanging from my eaves. The scene is set to talk about vampires. The ruins of New Slane's castle in the Scottish Highlands have the reputation of being a little haunted. The scene was once a bloody massacre where the Scots defeated the Danish invaders. It's also the location where once a year, it is said, shipwrecked sailors emerge from their watery graves. But probably more interesting is the belief that this was the place on which Bram Stoker modelled Dracula's castle. New Slane's castle is an imposing sight even now, sitting atop a cliff that towers over the village. It was in pristine condition in Stoker's day, and it was believed he took inspiration from it while imagining Count Dracula's castle in Transylvania. The novel's main character, Jonathan Harker, describes setting foot inside the castle for the first time. The Count halted, putting down my bags, closed the door, and crossing the room, opened another door, which led into a small octagonal room, lit by a single lamp, and seemingly without a window of any sort. This description exactly matches the floor plan of New Slane's castle. Some literary scholars hold that Bram Stoker wrote at least part of his horror classic, Dracula, in 1895, while staying at Cricket Lum Cottage near Aberdeenshire's Cruden Bay, and may have used Slane's castle as the model for Dracula's Transylvanian castle. Bram Stoker's first visit to Cruden Bay was as part of a walking tour in 1893. After that first trip up north to Aberdeenshire, Stoker returned every summer until 1910, spending around a month in Cruden Bay each time. He was so taken with the place that he even set two of his novels in the village. According to Stoker's son Noel, Jonathan Harker's alarming experiences in the Castle Dracula, comprising the first few chapters of the book, were believed to have been written at Cruden Bay. Interestingly enough, early drafts of Stoker's classic novel had Dracula landing at Cruden Bay under Slane's castle. Later drafts, it would become Whitby in North Yorkshire. So let's look now at some of the influences which may have inspired Bram Stoker. One form of she you definitely don't want to run into would be the Bavan She, sometimes called the White Woman of the Highlands. Their name, Bavan She, translating from Gaelic to Woman of the She, or more simply, Fairy Woman. Other legends claim they are witches who did not stop using their powers even after death. According to the Scottish folklorist Donald Alexander Mackenzie, the Bavan will always appear as a beautiful young woman wearing a long green dress that conceals the deer hooves she has instead of feet. She may also take the form of a hoodie crow or raven. The Bavan She are a type of fairy vampires or succubus which you might come across in the Scottish Highlands. They feed on their victims' blood by using their fingernails to dig into their necks and drain their blood. These blood-sucking female fairies are found in natural settings and forests. Historically, the Bavan She are one of the oldest types of vampires in the world. The Bavan She hunt in packs and inhabit rural areas. The Bavan She appear as beautiful seductresses intent on sucking the blood of their prey, who are typically travellers in secluded areas. They invite men to dance with them, and when the men are entranced by them, they attack with long talon-like fingernails, rather than with fangs. They make holes in the victim's neck and suck away their blood, life, and sexual potency. In some accounts, they even tear the victims apart in the frenzy, and may even take the form of those they had just drained of blood. The Bavin Shi can shapeshift from wolves into beautiful, voluptuous women in order to hunt and seduce men travelling through the highland forests or glens. Women are not safe from them either. Women victims become Bavin Shi themselves and become part of the pack. It is rare to see a lone Bavin Shi, as they prefer to hunt in packs. As with other fairy beliefs, the best defence against the Bavin Shi seems to be iron, but they are also afraid of horses, although it is said that the only way to stop a Bavin Shi is to find her grave and place a cairn of stones over it, which will trap her in her coffin. While travelling one time in the Scottish Highlands, I noted a curious little place by a roadside which had various cairns of stones. At the time, I puzzled over them and saw no real reason for cairns to have become established there. I wonder now if they could have been placed there by locals in the past, who might have been doing something based in folklore to dispel a local spirit, such as a Bavin Shi. And the Bavin Shi, just like other vampire stories, disappear with the arrival of dawn. There are various tales about the Bavin Shi, with a general theme of hunters being attacked in the wilderness at night. One tale, according to Mackenzie, involves four hunters in the Scottish Highlands who are sheltering for the night in a remote shieling. As the night grew colder, the men tried to keep their spirits up by singing around the fire. One of the hunters said aloud he wished they had some women to dance with. One of the men began to sing, while the others began to dance. Just then, four beautiful, voluptuous women, dressed in long green dresses, emerged from the woodland and came to the door. The men invited them in and couldn't believe their fortune. They said to the men that they'd heard the beautiful music and wanted to dance with them. The men agreed and began to dance with the women. Three of the women danced, while the fourth sat beside the vocalist. The vocalist, however, noticed blood dripping from one of his friend's necks. He looked around to see the other women also having dug their nails into the other men's necks, and were now draining their blood. Before his own dance partner could grab him, he ran off towards his horse, losing the vampire in the chase. Naturally, when daylight came, they disappeared. The man went back inside and found all of his friends dead and drained of blood. In one variation of the story, one of the men noticed that the women had deer hooves instead of feet and fled from them. He returned the next morning to find that the other hunters had had their throats cut and their chests laid open. The recurring motif in these vampire stories is that the Bavin Shi appeared almost immediately after the hunters expressed a desire for female companionship. This is connected with the traditional Scottish belief that if one were to make a wish at night without also invoking God's protection, then that wish would be granted in some terrible manner. Or more simply put, careful what you wish for. Another such tale occurred at Glen Tilt near Blairathal. Glen Tilt is a long glen extending 11 miles from the village of Blairathal to the remote falls of Tarf. It was there that two poachers may have become the target of a vampire. After bedding down for the night in a woodland bothy, they were attacked by a violent creature, which drank the blood from one of the men. Choosing to fight rather than flee, the men somehow managed to fend the vampire off, and they watched dumbstruck as it flew off into the night. Yet another similar story from the 1920s, this time in Aberdeen, Scotland. Another two poachers suffered a similar vampire encounter after they had also stopped at a cottage for the night. Again, both men lived to tell the tale and were adamant that their attacker was a vampire. So let's go now to the Scottish borders and discuss the Hundepreist, a vampire monk who once roamed the ruins of Melrose Abbey in the dark of night. I have in the past visited the site and found it very peaceful, a far cry from the story I'm about to relate, but in the dark of the evening, I stood close to the entrance gate. I recall a large bat swooping down at me, Knowing the story already, I displayed a crucifix. The abbey itself was founded in 1136 by King David, the first of Scotland, and dedicated to the Virgin Mary. Being itself one of several Cistercian monasteries that were to be built along the Scottish borders. The Vampire of Melrose had been, during his lifetime, the chaplain to a noble lady who lived nearby. The chaplain, unfortunately, preferred hunting, sin advice, to his clerical duties. Such was his lack of godliness that the other monks had nicknamed him Hundepriest, which meant dog priest. Since his main focus was hunting on horseback, accompanied by a pack of hunting dogs, rather than on spiritual matters. It is said of him in stories of the border marches, when at last he died, his death was no more holy than his selfish, sensual life had been. Following his death in the spring of 1196, it is said that due to his past sinful life, the chaplain's soul could not find rest. Instead, it is said that his ghostly form would stalk the streets of Melrose in search of blood and victims. One account says he tried to enter the cloisters of Melrose Abbey at the dark of night in the form of a winged bat, but had been unable to cross the threshold due to the prayers of the monks within. After being denied access to the abbey, it roamed the local countryside, making terrible noises until it reached the bedchamber of its former mistress. The lady reported that the vampire roamed about her dwelling, where he moaned and screeched at her, causing much alarm. Thus she had no choice but to summon monks from the abbey to investigate this disturbance and perform the rites of exorcism. Four monks were assembled then to kill off the Hundepriest. It was decided then that the monks would keep vigil at the former priest's grave. When the last glimmer of daylight died away, the Hundepriest was seen in the form of a vampire appearing to float from his grave with the gravestone pushed aside. One of the terrified monks hit the ghoul repeatedly with his staff. Then the grave opened up and the Hundepriest was sucked into the ground. All had returned to normal as though nothing had happened. And so it was that at first light, the monks opened up the coffin to find a grinning corpse with bloody lips. They removed the corpse and burned it so that no trace of the Hundepriest remained. Today, there are those in the town who say they can still hear a muted scream through the ruins in the dark of night. The ghostly apparition of a group of walking monks has also been seen at the abbey. Perhaps they are also keeping vigil and protecting local people from the evil vampire monk. Let's go now to Glamis Castle. Built in the 14th century, Glamis Castle is one of the oldest inhabited castles in Scotland. Besides many ghosts, Glamis Castle has a vampire legend. A few hundred years ago, one of the female servants was discovered drinking the blood from an unknown victim. As punishment for her crime, the woman was allegedly walled up inside a hidden chamber in the castle while she was still alive. Some people believe she is still in there, waiting to be released.